But first to a kingdom almost as ancient, where Ian Dunt is standing by, having watched as we have a prime ministerial address to the nation within an hour of each other. Albanese in Canberra and Starmer in Downing Street. Ian, how did Starmer go?
It was interesting, wasn't it? Did he use the exact same phrasing as Albanese when he said, "This will not be easy"?
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, that's quite telling. And it's quite, you know, it's also quite telling because these are quite similar men in how they come across and their quite cautious political instincts and their political anxieties. And the fact that they're being pushed into that, which is a sort of prologue to not quite COVID era, but quite similar to COVID sort of emergency, something, you know, it's essentially laying the groundwork for a statement, you know, that could be in 2 weeks, could be in a month, could be later, of saying, we really think you should be rationing the kind of journeys you're making by car now. You know, you should be thinking about your holidays. Is that a thing that's going to be affordable? Is that the kind of thing that's desirable?
Well, that's what Albanese did, you know. Think of taking public transport. Maybe you don't have to go, you know, fill up the tank so much. And think of your neighbours, you know, think of the people who need petrol more than you, that kind of thing. That really wasn't what Starmer was saying.
No, that's quite right. So that is a real distinction because, I mean, there is a resistance to talking that way in the British government. There's been no panic buying so far. And I think their concern is that once you ramp up, you encourage that kind of behaviour. So they don't go near it. Then they come under pressure on things like fuel. And essentially, you know, will you just maintain, you know, cuts to fuel duty? The thing is, you don't really want to be doing that. What you really want is for the price of the commodity to reflect its actual price on the market, because it gives you a sense of jeopardy, you know, as the customer. It discourages use by virtue of the price. When you're basically essentially kind of subsidizing in this way, it creates a barrier, a membrane in between the reality of the scarcity and people's usage. But of course, the pressure is, no, you've just got to, you know, do what you can on fuel duty, help out the families. That's where the media pressure comes from. And so probably the more sensible option is not quite the option that's being pushed by the press and the one that the politicians would abide by.
Well, that's also been the argument of economists in Australia. There isn't actually at the moment a supply problem in Australia, and I would guess there isn't in Britain either. But we in Australia panic bought. We went, you know, we filled the jerry cans. Keep calm and carry a jerry can, as a friend of mine, a cartoonist. What there is in Starmer that there hasn't been in Albanese, and this was perhaps more vividly in a press conference he did a couple of weeks ago, is a determination to bust the profiteers. That's not heard in Australia.
Yeah, there's quite. This is one of the things that's underanalyzed about Starmer's administration. When people call it right wing or centrist, which it is on cultural issues like immigration, which of course is like the majority of how we talk about left and right nowadays. But actually, when you reduce it to economics, it's a very left-wing administration and basically always has been. Like, its assessment of what is wrong with the British economy is essentially that we have market failure across a whole range of areas, you know, from climate change to transport. It has been willing to nationalize, for instance, you know, rail lines, bring them back under public ownership. It has been much more willing than previous administrations to criticize in quite colorful and robust terms energy companies. And so actually its natural default rhetoric around issues like this is along those kind of lines, which has a certain amount of truth to it. The weakness, and I think you just saw this in that press conference, is it's just not quite ready to level with people about the severity of what's going on. And I think what we're seeing across the world and across different sectors, I mean, you see the same thing in the markets. I mean, the markets are, I mean, of course, they're having a dreadful time. But when you look at the objective reality of what we're facing and what's coming down the line, they are really quite subdued compared to the severity of what we see. And partly, it's just a lack of public understanding. You know, this is not just about oil. It is not even just about things like liquefied natural gas. It's about things like aluminium, like helium, like fertilizer. You know, when you start looking across the things that go through the Strait of Hormuz and how relied on they are by so many countries, the reliance, for instance, in Brazil on fertilizer that comes through that route. The reliance on China on the soybeans that Brazil produces using that fertilizer. The kind of second order and third order effects that you see in places like Bangladesh, like Pakistan, on the basis of the restrictions on liquefied natural gas. We are looking, I mean, honestly, reading about it these last 2 weeks has been reminding me of hard Brexit, of no deal Brexit, of just this closing down of trade flow after trade flow after trade flow in a series of causal events that have secondary and tertiary impacts on the original source. And you think, wow, this is actually quite a scary scenario. And so I think when you look, when you listen to this kind of rhetoric from Starmer, from Albanese, they're having conversations behind closed doors that are much more scary than the conversation they're prepared to have in front of the public at the moment, but they're clearly gearing up, preparing themselves for those kinds of conversations coming down the line.
Could be difficult, but don't get too worried right now, seems to be the message.
Whereas in fact, people really should be quite worried right now. And I think anyone that's looking at the reality of what of travel through that strait is quite concerned. That the kind of the funny thing is, the kind of rhetoric you see from analysts that deal in commodities is much more severe, much more acute than the rhetoric you hear from politicians, from sort of stock market analysts, from those guys. That's where you hear the people ringing the alarm bell, being like, this is among the kind of worst case scenarios that we would imagine when we try to map out the potential dangers that we could face.
The other thing that Starmer was, I thought, powerful on was the failures of Brexit and using this crisis as a way of drawing closer to Europe.
Yes, that's interesting, isn't it? Sort of a third of the way through his press conference, he sort of goes, well, you know, what this is going to mean, obviously, is we're going to have to get closer to Europe. And this is now a kind of drumbeat that you get from Labour. Remember, this is a party that during the election campaign would not even acknowledge that Brexit had done any damage. You know, was just not prepared to go there for fear of splitting their electoral coalition on culture war lines. Now, they can't really shut up about it. I mean, they're already, you know, they've passed laws and they're negotiating agreements that would essentially align Britain with Europe on agriculture, certainly, and some elements of its industrial policy. That, by the way, is a big gap. I mean, you're basically saying whatever the law is that Europe passes, we will copy it. You know, the entire argument for Brexit was we're going to be independent in our policy making, in our regulations. All of that's gone. No one really talks about it anymore, but all of that's gone. We've decided, no, absolutely, we're going to make things according to the specifications that are set by our largest trading partner. Because of course you will, as it was always obvious we eventually would.
And without now, without any participation by Britain. We just have to you just have to do what they say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, back in the day, we used to have a seat at the table, right? I mean, basically, it's as if the last few years have really involved going through the list of arguments that people made for staying in the EU in 2016 and ticking them off one by one as they are validated one after the other. You know, every single one of them has turned out to be true. And one of the core ones was a small and medium-sized country like Britain is not going to set regulations. You know, it's, for instance, if you think about like the USB-C charger, you know, if Britain can say, we're going to introduce a new kind of charger, USB Alpha, and it's in different size, and that's going to be on all the phones. And you can do that, but all the manufacturers are still going to make their phones according to USB-C because that is the charger that is used everywhere. And that's how it works in trade. It doesn't matter what law you pass. What matters is what's cheapest for manufacturers to do to sell their product in the maximum number of locations. So, of course, they will keep on doing it according to European specifications because that is the reality of how trade operates. Now, Starmer has accepted those arguments. Now he's saying, you know what? It's going to have to involve security. It's going to have to involve closer cooperation. He's not yet giving us the details of what that will entail. It's still mood music, but we're getting it now from the Chancellor 2 weeks ago at a May's lecture, from the Prime Minister at a very high level, you know, in Downing Street. So very clearly now we see the direction of travel. We see what they're trying to achieve. And it's quite hard to escape the view that, you know, this is partly motivated by Donald Trump's outbursts about NATO. The more that that kind of transatlantic relationship dissolves and corrodes and collapses, the more the relationship with Europe becomes the UK government's absolute priority.
And I was interested to see, I've never watched him in a press conference, I was interested to see that he just doesn't answer the questions. It's terrible. I mean, he's worse than our prime minister.
Yeah, he does. I mean, you know what? Honestly, I barely noticed that because it's just been so long since there's been any kind of political figure who does actually address the question that you just sort of price it in. The thing that, you know, sort of usually comes up, people saying, well, look, he's so uncharismatic. And the thing is, I mean, obviously, it's sort of true. I mean, he looks like a kind of a bank manager telling you you're about to be turned down for a mortgage. But, and there's something about his sort of face, you know, his mouth is very reticent. It's as if his mouth is trying to escape from the front of his face. So everything looks like it's coming across, like it's being forced from him at gunpoint. And yet, that was the energy that he brought that people wanted when they elected him in 2024.
Yes.
They wanted boring. They wanted managerial. They wanted stable. You know, he said after the election, he was going to bring a politics that treads, quote, treads more lightly in people's lives, an unusually pretty phrase from him. And I think something that people really wanted. Now, of course, that hasn't happened. But that is the version of him that can succeed politically. It's not going to be that he turns into Tony Blair or, you know, whatever. It's not going to be that. It's going to be that he brings back that reassuring sense of boredom that they desired. And this scenario right now actually sort of plays to his advantage in that respect. You know, the world is very chaotic. He's taken the right course by keeping Britain out. People are looking for a firm hand on the tiller, someone boring and managerial who get the job done and not be too hysterical about it all. And he thinks that kind of fits the personality that he has, the image that he has. I think he sort of feels that this moment will work for him. And he's probably right, by the way, because you look at the challengers in Labour. And you know, people like Angela Rayner, like Wes Streeting, like Andy Burnham. I mean, quite apart from anything else, do you really want to take over like months before an energy crisis hits? Like in a way, to desire to replace him right now shows that you simply don't have the intellectual ability to do the job because it's not the right time for you personally to be there. So in a way, the crisis also discourages the challenge against him that he was facing internally within the Labour Party.
So he's safe for a time. Ian, thank you so much for joining us once again on Late Night Live. I have been speaking to Ian Dunt, columnist with iNews, co-host of the Origin Story podcast, and that press conference with Starmer is, of course, up there on the net, YouTube, various other people.